Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. And I usually have my list of things I need to say, my obligatories, but actually I just wanted to wish everybody a Merry Christmas. I usually play the same show that I record for Christmas Eve, and I just replay that because I think speaking of the history of Christmas and helping everybody kind of understand, you know, what it is we're doing and why it is we're doing it so that people can start connecting the dots. Now, apparently, it's been kind of developed and or we've finally learned, and this is a very evil thing that you can't talk about where we are, what we're doing, without recognizing the evil in our lives. And so we've been played and we're constantly being played. Everybody acknowledges the conspiracy, you know, in the COVID, the pandemic, and how all of these things help manipulate and move society. I mean, there are the outliers, the people that, you know, don't necessarily go along. But if you do the manipulation right, you can really mitigate that. Or if you create a movement, you can actually get all people, you know, kind of engaged. But when you look at movements, movements will always fail unless they're on the truth. And this is why we've been really helping, you know, create the I'll just say metaphorically, we're helping you understand that making your campaigns on movements is far more critical, because if you're basing your campaigns on the truth, holding people accountable, because this is what it's all about. And moving forward, and the reason why I have the curriculum that I do is to help you understand historically what the facts are so that we can actually start holding people accountable. We need to hold ourselves accountable. You know, you've heard me speak how sacred and how precious it is to be a citizen. And so to be a citizen in this nation and to be a citizen in Christianity, in the Church of Christ, whatever church you go to. Because, well, let me get into all of that. But before I do, I wanted to reach out and, one, wish you Merry Christmas. And I actually want to wish you comfort and joy. Because it's not about being merry as much as it is comfort and joy. Because I know that through the years, and as a matter of fact, having a close friend lose a family member, a child of theirs, friends of the family, close to us, lost a child. And it is a tough time of year. And it's hard to be merry. But if we actually look at the big picture and the macro, I think understanding the birth of Christ, if we're focused on that and not the commercial side of Christmas, we can actually find comfort and joy. And as long as we're focused on Christ, I believe that we will find comfort and joy. Merry is more of, you know, the gaiety or the, you know, the party spirit. And when we really start looking at this, you can see kind of how this manipulation, how we kind of covered that yesterday. There's some parts of this that I didn't cover that I think you still deserve. You still deserve to know even further into this, because the corporate world has been kind of really well organized. I mean, Satan has his leagues of those who are working and pushing and guiding us down these very specific lanes to get a very specific outcome. That's why, I mean, you don't just take all of this effort and you don't spend all of this time and money and resources. And, you know, this is a huge investment on evil, if you really understand what I'm saying. The whole world is heavily invested in trying to defeat Christ's plan. Or I should not actually say his plan, our Creator's plan. So, as we kind of look at the year, one of the things I have not actually been able to say, and I really don't want to, this is tough to do because I don't want to gloat and I don't want to be happy or, you know, seem like I'm not humbled. I am absolutely humbled by the way our ratings have increased because we actually started posting them because I didn't want to start talking about the ratings of Reclaiming the Republic without actually showing you where we're ranking on streaming. Now, TalkStream Live actually keeps track of who is streaming the most. And I remember when I first started with TalkStream Live and I was, you know, dealing with a few people, we'd watch how I would, you know, Red State Talk Radio was out in the hundreds or what have you. I mean, when I came on, the show started actually going up in rankings into the 30s and the 20s. And when you look at, and you go to TalkStream Live, and you look at the very top row on the homepage, and there's two rows, right? The top row is streaming, and the bottom row is podcasting. And if you hit the little arrow where the dots are, you can actually go to the next page, the next page. And I'd encourage everybody to do that if you've got a chance and you got time, so you can kind of see how many different talk shows are out there streaming and are podcast that are being pulled in on a given, you know, point in time of the day. So at 3:00 Pacific time, 6 p.m. East Coast time, when this show broadcasts, there are a lot. It's probably one of the toughest times because early morning people, you know, look for certain things, traffic flow and that type of stuff. But 3:00 is probably the toughest time because everybody's awake. Anybody that's producing, you know, from East Coast to West Coast, I mean, people on the East Coast are commuting home from work and people on the West Coast are actually still working and so forth. So it's, and they're beginning to end their days. But the point is that the 3, 4, and 5 o'clock hours are really where, you know, it's very competitive. And so you'll notice that on the website, on Reclaiming the Republic Red State Talk Radio podcast page, we actually have at the very, very bottom, we've got September, October, November, and we'll be adding December soon. But the point is that we've been enjoying and we've slowly been going up to the top 10. And for the past couple of years, we have been top 10 in the top 10 rankings. And now we're in the top 5. I mean, every once in a while, we start off with a ranking of 6, but we've actually, in the last week or so, we've been 4 or 3. That's right, 4 or 3. And so we're only doing this because you're spreading the word and you're helping everybody, you know, get engaged, get informed, and get engaged. Now, I want to make clear here, this is not a funded show at all. I mean, we cover the costs and we do not have any money coming in from Timber Nation or what have you. And we've really made a point of trying to create a relationship. I've already had an initial conversation with Timber Nation that down the road, I want to help get Patriot companies that do good products and good work to actually start committing to contributing to people willing to support the Constitution. I want to be able to reach out to these good companies because of their success and because of their love for the Constitution. I want to get them to actually help contribute to these candidates that will sign the pledges because I'm not going to ask them to just contribute to anybody. Not to Trump or not to any good, you know, the beloved Republican. They have to sign the pledge that their whole focus is full compliance of the Constitution and giving the people the outcome of being able to actually hold their public servants accountable. It's all really about accountability. This is the huge difference. We need to hold people accountable. This is the message you won't hear from Republicans. They may give you lip service, but they have removed their heart far from that, or from this whole point. In fact, and I say that, folks, is because they don't want to hold their public servants accountable. They want to give their public servants the room to be able to do what we call political theatrics, which means that they can actually continually sell you out for their own benefit and for the agenda of whomever we're serving, whoever they're serving. And I'm telling you, it's not Christ. It's not anything good or of good nature. I mean, what we're seeing with our politics and everything else, it's all moving us towards this global government. And there's a lot of lip service of stopping this and stopping that. And there's a lot of entertainers out there that are going down the same path. And they do not understand. I don't think that it's a matter of whether they understand. I think they just don't care. They only care about growing the money into their organization because guess what? It filters up to the top. Look at the John Birch Society. The top dog makes all the money. Right? Turning Point USA, all of these types of organizations, whether it be, those or maybe a less well-known like, Tactical Civics, they don't care about solving the problem. Oh, they'll give you the lip service, vote Republican, blah, blah, blah. And that's all it is blah, blah, blah. It's not about holding people fully accountable. There's no way you're going to get anybody from Turning Point, Tactical Civics, John Birch Society to talk about what we need to do to remove the stranglehold of politics that the parties have. The only way you can get there is we have to force the parties to actually let go. We actually have to get into the parties and let go of that party agenda and focus on the Constitution. In other words, we actually have to take back these parties, just like Madison created the party way back in 1792 with Jefferson. And what we need to do is we need to actually get everything converted to be focused on the Constitution and full compliance. No more agendas. No more. But back to Christmas message. Forgive me for going down that rant. This is a time to center on Christ. And I want to thank you humbly from my heart the fact that you've been helping grow this movement. As a matter of fact, the one thing that I can say is I welcome the stress, and the stress is mounting and it's getting greater and greater because the more we're going, the more I have to do, which is a good thing. I've been waiting for this. So what that means is we're doing more mentoring calls. We're working with more people. We've got more irons in the fire. Keep it coming. But don't look at me as your mainstay. I'm trying to develop you. I'm trying to develop everybody. We need people in every county to be the statesman, to actually understand the Constitution. Take my work. Take the work of the framers. Take all of this that was all inspired by our divine hand of providence, by the Creator. And you can take a stand on the same rock and the same mountain, or I should say the same granite of foundation that He's given us. The truth of liberty and this amazing miracle called the Constitution. We as a nation have been failing to recognize and sanctify that thing. We've allowed political theatrics and party, agendas to drive us into these ditches in so many different directions. So, again, let me get back to the focusing on Christ and Christmas, because yesterday I gave you kind of a historical timeline, right? That, the Christmas was migrating into the wilding, and I gave you that period or that macro view from Cromwell or, the 16th, 17th, and so forth, moving forward into today, the century of this migration of, I'll not only say political, but religious turmoil. Because religiously, there was a movement in England to actually become more pure, and they went back to the wilding. They went back to the pagan celebrations. So we know the whole point of Christmas is about celebrating the birth of Christ. So let's start a really heated debate. let's put the stick and stir the pot a little bit, because if you really want to create a controversy, if you really want to get people into arguing, then because the only way we're going to know some of the truth is actually getting the source documents. And I question source documents that go that far back. But I do know this, that Christ wasn't born on December 25th, the day we celebrate. This was concocted to try to make something very special about this time of year. And I'll have you know, folks, the winter solstice is not something holy. The celebration of the winter, and to basically bring Christ into this and to get everybody to recognize and to getting the whole world to celebrate supposedly Christ on this day has something very demonic to it. I'll put it to you that way, because it doesn't make sense. I mean, the Bible does tell us that we're all being misled. So we have to start challenging everything. And so a long time ago, I started challenging and looking at this. And I know that I get this reputation of kicking sand in the teeth, but it's not about that. It's about, okay, if we're going to focus on Christ, let's focus on Christ, but don't let us be manipulated into the corporations, into the multitude of corporations, not just buying gifts and technology and so forth, but it's about music too. As we look, we can easily create a timeline, and we can actually find, you know, a close proximity. I remember, I don't know the source of what my father told me, but he told me it was early spring when Christ was born. And I've heard from other people that seem to be pretty knowledgeable that they thought it was in the fall. Now, I'm not going to try to start an argument, but I'm going to stir that pot. When was Christ really born? Does it matter when, as long as we're recognizing him? But you can't recognize him in a commercial, or I should say in a world or a carnal aspect, because that's like mocking him. So what we need to do is we need to kind of place context to this, because, and the best way for me to do this, because I already mentioned it before, is citizenship. As citizens of this nation and the laws of this nation that guard the liberty, individual liberty and individual sovereignty, we're losing all of that. You have no idea how much we've lost because the corporations are working with government and so forth. So we cover that throughout the year. So the fact is this, we're here to try to focus. We're here to try to be singular to doing good and, you know, providing for our families and actually finding Christ in our lives and, you know, committing to, you know, walk and follow him. So what we have to do is we actually have to have a dual citizenship. And this dual citizenship is not a contrast or a conflict, because when you're supporting the liberty of others, that is basically helping everybody understand that they have to choose Christ on their own. Trying to create a theocracy is antithetical. And I've said this before, I'm all on board with the theocracy when Christ comes, but I'm not on board with the theocracy today. In any form at all, because that is where you begin causing problems. And that's why, you know, you hear me actually ridicule all of these people that say we need to have a biblical constitution. I believe that what we have is what God gave us. That's what the framers even told us. So let us stop surrendering our spiritual citizenship this time of year into this pagan tradition. And I want to actually talk about this spiritual citizenship. And I usually never cite scriptures, but I'm going to do this today. Because in Ephesians, the second chapter, 19 and 20, this is what, and I forget who wrote it, so forgive me. But this is what you'll find in Ephesians 2, 19, 20. Now, therefore, ye are no more strangers and foreigners, but fellow citizens with the saints and of the household of God, and are built upon the foundation of the apostles and prophets, Jesus Christ himself being the chief cornerstone. Now, King James Version. We are citizens in the household of God when we take upon him his name, when we actually claim to be Christian and following him. So we're emissaries for Christ, but we're also emissaries for the Constitution. There is no conflict whatsoever. The only way we actually start creating conflict is when people start creating agendas to serve themselves instead of serving him. And this is one of the reasons why we're to serve him, and we're basically to support and defend that Constitution, because it is supporting the liberty and the independence and sovereignty of others, not just ourselves. This, we actually have this turning point to steal from the money-making organization, but we're at a turning point where we can actually become, again, the true beacon that we were meant to be. Reagan even gave lip service to this, that America was this beacon on the hill. No, we weren't a beacon on the hill for them to, you know, create their own little, you know, bastion of liberty. They were to join with us. Article 4 and Section 3 of Article 4 clearly states that states must be admitted. It's just like, how do you become a household member of in God's, you know, household? How do you become a citizen? Well, you actually have to take those steps. You actually have to step into that. Now, there are different doctrinal ways, from baptism or just accepting Christ. Whatever your doctrinal way is, this is something you have to choose to do. And you have to actually have faith and works both together in going down these paths. Same thing as a citizen. You have to step into this, even though you were born into this. You may have been born in a family of Christianity. You still have to take it upon yourself to accept him. It is the same thing as a citizen of this nation. You have to take the responsibility of a citizen and start defending and supporting that Constitution. That is the requirement. Not becoming a Republican. Not becoming a Democrat, or not, you know, becoming a part of a perverse religion that is actually attacking the Constitution. Satanism, communism, Mohammedism, or Islam, these faiths are absolutely antithetical to supporting and defending the Constitution. It is that simple. And so how blessed are we for this nation? How blessed are we for the privilege and opportunity to openly worship? And that is being challenged more and more. The pandemic took away our ability to openly worship. Oh, well, we've got that back. Oh, you think so? They still have those laws on the book to seize the rest of your liberties, and they've done so well, and they've served the evildoers of those laws so well that they're going to come back and do it again. Let us now focus today and moving forward on the spirit of the holiday. Let us instead make his spirit this new norm to this particular season. And it is about liberty, right? I mean, you can't force somebody to be saved. He came and died for us. And that was the mark of his gift of his life. Being born, he came here to actually become an eternal king, our savior. So let us recognize what that means. And the way we recognize and the way we give thanks is not by, you know, creating entitlements and giving kids everything that they want. You know, I have to say that I was a tough dad, because I just... Even though it took us a while to migrate away from, you know, these traditions, you know, there was always this, you know, come on, it's the spirit of the season, not necessarily the merriment and the winter wilding, that, you know, let's not lose sight of what and why we're doing all of this. So I know it was tough in our household, and I know we need to make it tougher. We need to actually create a new generation with a new paradigm of actually understanding service and work and recreating the value of hard work. But when we come back, I kind of want to wrap up this whole message And you won't be surprised. We'll be right back.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416. Okay, all things being said, what we want to do is we really want to focus on this closing out the history. Now, when we actually talk about, you know, Christianity, all of these different things, and we try to meld this with this commercializing Christmas, I don't think people realize the depth of commerciality or the manipulation. Now, what I'm going to do is I'm actually going to really go down a path that's going to make people scratch their heads. Because one of the things I want to do is I'm going to actually read for you this kind of description of this album that was created by, and this is you'll find this on the Acoustic Sounds. There's an SASD that's coming out of the Velvet Underground. And if anybody understands the Velvet Underground, and I believe Lou Reed was behind this, I mean, their whole focus was drug, sex, and rock and roll, and basically manipulating children to actually, you know, glamorize this evil. I don't want to be tongue-tied. So let me just read what they put in this description, because I want you to, there's a reason why I'm introducing this to you. After the Velvet Underground cut three albums, the jazz-oriented Lou Reed, you know, Take a Walk on the Wild Side, those things, the label, they actually changed away from the Verve label, and they went to the powerhouse of Atlantic Records in 1970. And so the label head, Ahmet Ertegun, and it sounds German, right? Supposedly asked Lou Reed to avoid sex and drugs in his song and instead focus on making an album loaded with hits. Loaded was the name of the song or the album that they came out with. So they're kind of celebrating this. And they actually did that. They actually came out with this album, and it was kind of loaded with this less focus on sex, drugs, and rock and roll. Now, at this point in time, and what I want to do, because I need to help place a little context of why we're going here, as we look at the cultural, you know, layout, music is a universal link to all cultures. And the Velvet Underground in 1970, kind of this description shows how the labels of the music industry were working in trying to create nuances of opening people up. Because, see, if somebody creates a good song, then somebody will end up stumbling over their old bad songs. And, you know, they'll just listen to them and go, oh, and not knowing, just listening to the words and listening to the music has influence. Now, we as a nation and we as a society, going back hundreds of years, we started learning about what it takes to influence people and so forth. But this goes back even generations, I actually say societal generations, because the concept of manipulating or using music to set evil tones and or good tones actually became a religious practice. If you didn't know, some augmented and demented types of chords and sounds, diminished and what have you, there's these different terms in music, and I'm not going to get into it, but the fact is, some of those types of musical chords and sounds were considered evil as we started moving forward, because they understood those cultures, and they created these they created context to how that sound and that type of music was evil. Nevertheless, the fact is, Satan knows and uses the same things, because it's kind of like fire burns. Certain things, you use them and they work. They absolutely work. They're tools. This is all about using tools and, you know, helping manipulate us and learning. I mean, the CIA has actually been able to do tests like the Milgram experiment and these other types of tests. And you can go look at the history of all of that to see how, and we've gotten very smart on manipulation, very smart. Satan has only proven that you can actually manipulate the society and the world, which is one of the reasons why the Bible has foretold that we will all be deceived, except for a very few. Now, the fact is, if one researches the history of the songs celebrating the birth of Christ, one will find an array of a very few scattered way back. I mean, you know, from the fall of Christ Church and the establishment of the Roman Catholic Empire and Church. One will start seeing how they've created this link as, again, music is a link, right? Even in Christ's time, psalms, which were songs, you know, poems and what have you, those were a part of their religious worship. It was integrated. Music is very tied to our culture, as well as our faith, religion, and all sorts of things that we, you know, create these bonds with music. It is center in our society. Way back then, even today, in this new world society that we have, it is still centered. Look at how we see these people that become stars, how they start preaching to us. I mean, didn't John Lennon tell us that he was more popular to the kids of the world, and to kids of America especially, than Christ? That is an indictment. That is showing you how powerful this medium is. Just like the medium of movies, the medium of all these different forms of medium are used and utilized. This goes back to what I said yesterday. If you're familiar with Plato's Republic, the entertainment industry is integral to the movement and creation of statism. You absolutely have to have a synchronized effort across the board, from news to entertainment to literature, all of these things that help lead everybody to the same outcome. So if one starts researching the history of these songs, like I said, you'll start finding that the scattering of songs celebrating Christ's birth actually started really, you know, I'd say about the 11th to the 18th century. You'd find a few. But none of them really was mentioning Christmas. I think the first maybe, you know, mentioning of Christmas was in the 18th century, really moving towards the 19th century. In other words, there was already discussion. This is where we see a little spotlight showing how there were efforts in throughout the world of trying to create a link of the winter pagan holiday, this pagan holiday of Satan, and how they were trying to marry Christianity into it to get the Christians to also celebrate this time of year. Now, as we kind of look at, you know, the songs, if you actually go research the songs of Christmas, you will find that in the 1800s is when all of the religious songs, O Holy Night, those types of songs actually, you know, were written and became, you know, carols that helped us have reverence in worshiping and finding time to make Christmas important. it wasn't until a little later where they started getting people to actually create symbols, you know, like idols, maybe Christmas trees, wreaths, what have you, so that you would actually start creating this non-Christian symbology. Now, as the churches got involved in this, I mean, the wreath itself was supposedly the crown of Christ, that holy thorny wreath. Those types of things they started creating these associations with, but in all honesty, that you're just putting lipstick on a pig. Because even though there may have been the best intent of trying to create this race, this not racial, but this religious symbology of affixing it to this pagan holiday, over time, nobody understood, but over time, they would actually start secularizing. And when you look in the 1900s, in the 20th century, going from the 19th to the 20th century, there was a concerted effort of secularizing. This is when all the fun songs of Christmas came in. You know, Dashing Through the Snow and the, you know, Frosty the Snowman, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. Many of these songs are I'm Dreaming of a White Christmas. Trying to kind of create, and you'll notice that certain songs were definitely appealed to kids and they were secular. They had nothing to do with Christ. But some of the adult songs kind of had this religious undertone, right? And actually, there's this one song, and I forget, about It's Cold Outside, something like that. And so when we start looking at the progression of music and how we've completely changed or morphed into a secular, actually a godless celebration of Christmas into the music, this is an indictment of how we've slowly created something with good and how they've, over time, by the watering down of our mores in our society to basically debasing us, there we go. Are we surprised? Are you surprised? You shouldn't be. That is the outcome. That is the drive. That is the direction that we're all being pushed. So the real question is, do we maintain and you know, stay the course, or do we put our foot down and say, we need to really, what do we need to do? I told you for Thanksgiving what we needed to do. And so as we move forward, as we actually start looking, and this is where that the music moguls, you can't tell me that they have not been involved in making sure that the songs that they print are more kid-like, more secular, more fun, you know, more rowdy, more party, what have you. Rock and roll Christmas. And it's the rest is history, folks. The rest is history. You can't tell me, when we really start looking at how this all started, regardless of the good intent of, but it was all really used to change our behavior, as well as start masking and affixing a religious celebration of a religious people to celebrating something. And I have no idea, because I don't study the dark sides of, you know, worshiping Satan, but there's got to be something very wrong about the winter wilding, the winter solstice, and the celebration of that. We know that the summer solstice is another one that everybody, but we don't have a holiday for that. Everybody is always out on the beach and worshiping the sun and so forth. Anyway, let me just kind of move, you know, us to closing out on this concept. And then what I want to do is get into the curriculum to come. If we can move, if you can actually start changing, as a matter of fact, one of the, like I said, it wasn't easy in my household. One of the things I gave my kids were religious books and or books that had very good meanings, history and those types of things, because I wanted to make sure that they were getting things of substance and context and content that was appropriate to help, you know, form and frame their, you know, as they were impressionable adolescents and what have you. I remember it was very tough, and this is long before I even started looking with, you know, Christmas as, you know, why are we doing this type of thing. I was just a young father, And I remember when I was in the Marine Corps, we couldn't even really afford presents for the kids. And friends of ours, you know, at our church, and, you know, our faithful friends kind of came, without us even knowing, came to our door, and there was just an unbelievable outpouring of this, of the love that they had for us in giving, you know, our children a very, very good Christmas. And we were absolutely humbled that, you know, people have done that for us. And it was very touching. And to receive that and the blessings that we received from that, we never took those types of things for granted. I believe that my children, you know, they are well-rounded on not taking things for granted. They, like I said, they had a tough dad. It was so tough that when my son decided to join the service, he decided to join the Army because he was just afraid of the Marine Corps. He did so well in the Army that they said, wow, you know, you're a pretty well-disciplined kid. You really didn't need boot camp. And they said, you know, why is that? And he said, well, my dad's a Marine. So anyway, service is the key. When we look at sanctifying something, that's why Thanksgiving should be our most holy of holidays, where we actually recognize a true gift from God that we all receive blessings from, and that's that Constitution. Now, when we look at celebrating his birth, that is something very personal. And I think that's something that each of us need to figure out, you know, what that means to us and how we can serve others. Because if you really want to sanctify your relationship with Christ, you have to sacrifice to sanctify that. In other words, the way you actually say thank you is not, you know, by just singing songs and going to church. It's actually doing his work by serving others. We've kind of lost that. And I believe that changing the spirit of America for those types of things, where we serve the Constitution and we serve him, this is the demeanor. This is what we, the people, need to be doing. And so we're here to help you. Our focus is to help you understand what you need to do in serving the nation. And understanding the nation is a big part of that. That's one of the reasons why we have a very specific curriculum that we've kind of come up with over time. And so let me just say this. Having a special time of the year to recognize Christ is a divine thing to do. And having the opportunity, let's not miss the opportunity by actually recognizing that in the right way. Because if we're not recognizing it in a way he would recognize, you know, it's kind of like the sacrifices to Baal and the sacrifice to God. You know, who actually was, you know, performing the proper sacrifice. The point is that who was actually the real God, and who are we serving? The point is that you can make this time of year something that is tailored and framed towards you and your family spirituality in figuring out how to serve others in your family, others in your community, or people at random. Figure it out. I'm not here to tell you what to do. As a matter of fact, I get that all the time. People say, well, what do you think I ought to do? You need to pray. You need to come to this. These need to be your decisions. And don't be surprised when you actually come up with great ideas, because you've actually taken the effort and time to actually do something in searching for the truth, searching for what you should be doing. Anyway, Merry Christmas to all. Now, one of the things that I wanted to cover, because I won't have much time, we've got content, and on New Year's Eve and on New Year's Day, we'll be covering how to set effective goals. That's the culmination of the year, right? Every year we end up, you know, setting goals for the new year. So how do you do that? That's how we kind of start the new year off, is how to set effective goals so you can be successful. Folks, your success is our success. When we're all succeeding, we're all winning, especially if what we're succeeding in is righteous and worthwhile. Then we all win. So one of the things that we cover every year is the Tory Acts. And, you know, I can't not say this, how important the Tory Acts are, because as we go into the Tory Acts, this actually helps us gives us a good glimpse of common law. This is why we need to cover common law, and this is why I'm in the pursuit of getting somebody to actually give us common law in our hybrid constitutional republic, what it means. What does common law really mean? Don't let the lawyers and judges tell us, and the historians, because they're giving us a scam. They're giving us their view of how they have created and concocted it for us. Okay? Because common law is literally a common law that is based upon the supreme law of the land, or having a reverence for that. Because common law cannot rewrite the Bible. So common law today cannot rewrite the Constitution, the U.S. Constitution, in every state, nor can it rewrite your Constitution. So understanding the Tory Acts and what they were doing in the very beginning to, one, resist England and to organize themselves into Republican bodies and then create the Continental Congress that evolved into the Constitutional Convention for the Constitution. So we're going to talk about that. So we're going to actually cover that. We're also going to cover the scale of liberty. This is something that I'm going to be covering on Mondays or Friday, on that type of day. So when I say it's a content, that's something that we will share with you with the graces of Tammy Young or somebody else. And so down the road, I don't know how long Tammy Young will be able to join us, but if somebody else comes along or what have you, then we'll have two. But bottom line, this is all right here to help Tammy Young and you and me in learning and understanding all of these events that occurred. So we're going to cover the scale of liberty. This is something I'm going to cover. I will cover the laws of nature and nature's God. And I'm going to cover the American republicanism, this whole concept. Now, I cover these things throughout the year, but I'm going to set the tone at the beginning of the year by covering these things. The next thing of content that you'll hear, so we're going to hit the Tory Acts, and as soon as we're done with the Tory Acts, Tammy and I are going to go into the Organic Act, because I wanted to do this year, but we ran out of time. And so we just finished up the notes on nullification, and so we're finishing up. And so what we're going to be doing in January is we'll hit the Organic Acts. This is a must listen, folks. You need to hear this treaty that they created with Britain. Remember, I told you that they cannot create a treaty that is not enumerated within their powers. In other words, that treaty, when we go through the nuts and bolts of it, you'll see how much of it's really legitimate. And if any part makes it illegitimate, then the whole part is bad. The whole part is void. Anyway, we're also going to cover the ratification debates. But in setting that up, we're going to cover the... help me out here. The Articles of Association, we're going to cover the Articles of Confederation, and then we're going to cover the amendments to the Articles of Confederation. Then we're going to go into the Constitutional Convention. Now, technically, this is where we would kind of hit highlights of Madison's notes on the Constitutional Convention, and then we will actually start covering the constitutional debates. So that's what will lead up into the constitutional debates. Now, what we're going to do is we didn't cover this at the end. So what we're going to do is we're going to cover Madison's letter to John G. Jackson, kind of going backwards. a little bit, or leaping ahead in time to 1821, where Madison emphasizes the importance of the ratification debates. Then we're going to cover these other documents that also emphasize the importance of the ratification debates as they look at creating new powers, roles, and responsibilities that the federal government is going to start taking on, such as the Assumption Act, the cod fishery bounties. And then we're going to cover, again, Madison's essay on property. That's going to be down the road. We just covered that, right? Or we're actually just covering that. We're going to cover the Whiskey Rebellion. We're going to cover the 1798 resolutions all over again, what we just covered. Those things are most critical. That's one of the reasons why we've actually put up a separate reading with a different group of people so that you can listen to an open conversation of questions and so forth with a group of people. That is on the Academic Source Documents page. The State Enabling Acts, we need to cover those. We need to cover the Missouri Compromise, which is a part of the Missouri Enabling Act. We need to cover the Monroe Doctrine, the Manifest Destiny. We need to also bring up the vetoes of the Department of Transportation. All of these things are content, right? The Whiskey Rebellion, actually even before that, the Organic Act, the ratification debates, all these letters, Assumption Acts, these initial acts of Congress, Madison's emphasis on the ratification, this is all content. So this is all, we're going to read these documents for you. So that, actually not for you, but hopefully with you. We post these documents on the source documents page. In other words, we're sharing the highlights we have in these so you can read along. As you read along, you'll hear us talk, you'll hear me or others describe what that is or talk about what was going on so that you can have a better understanding. The better you understand these things, the more you can start clicking everything into place to become a statesman of the Constitution. There is nothing evil or bad about this Constitution or any of its amendments. The 17th and 16th Amendments were mechanisms of actually changing the Constitution, but the implementations is where it went evil. In other words, there's no boogeyman in any of the amendments. The two amendments that were boogeymanned by the progressives was the original 13th Amendment and the 14th Amendment. But there's not a bad one in the bunch. Not a bad one. I know you're shaking your heads. There's a few of you that are. We'll go through this. We'll prove this. The unconstitutional establishment of the Department of Home. This is the first breach in the Constitution, where they finally actually create an unconstitutional role and responsibility and power. We hope to cover, again, the Constitutions on Constitution Day moving forward. So what we want to do is we want to kind of lay it out so that historically we're going to be covering those things that are happening at that point in time, like the Tory Acts. The most critical Tory Act was in June 2nd, 1776. This is why every June 2nd, we try to cover this if it is a radio day. And if not, we'll still cover it on the day after, what have you. So anyway, we also need to cover these miscellaneous topics, First Amendment petitions, common law grand juries. We have a lot that we need to cover. The parties and the Rhino Party. We also need to talk about some of the holidays that, you know, we celebrate and recognize, right? And so there's that, along with all sorts of other things, such as these paradigms that I try to share with you, upstream, downstream, and all these other things that we try to throw in here. This is not an entertainment. I'm not here to give you news. I'm not here to entertain. I'm here to educate you, because this is how we make America great once and for all, when we actually have a firm foundation throughout the Union on what we need to do. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.